and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 417. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is the return of Glenn Fox.
Oh, diddly.
And Emily Soden speaking from her new pad.
Hi, it's echoey in here.
It's echoey in your vast new maison. How was the move? Are you all in and all good? Happy? Comfortable?
Yep, I almost fell out of a window yesterday.
Well, that's how you find out windows are there.
It's only the special ones can do it.
It caught you by surprise. You didn't notice that one on the floor plan. You just thought it was a particularly transparent wall.
Yeah, I hopped, skipped and tripped.
We're glad you're all in and you didn't die during your first night at your new place. I'm still in my old place. You, Glenn?
Yeah, still in the creaky old mansion house.
Still here? It's all right, though. It's good. It's fine. It means we're comfortable and settled and not just too impoverished to move anywhere else.
Yeah.
Yes, good, isn't it? So, it was spooky this week. Spooky Halloween goodness. It's been and it's gone. And did you get your spooks on? Did you rattle some bones? Did you approach strangers, demand they give you stuff for free, and then throw things at them when they didn't, in the true spirit of this weird holiday?
I ate some sweets.
Well done.
Yeah, no, I bought sweets for the children in the new road, but no one turned up, so now I have a bag full of sweets that we're just going to have to eat.
My mum did that too.
That's the perfect outcome, isn't it?
Yeah.
No people knocking on your door, no kids, but lots of sweets.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose so. Win-win.
Congratulations, you won. We were actually out. I think I was in the cinema watching Thor during that evening. I forgot it was Halloween's Eve that night because they did the party stuff at the weekend. And I did see some crazy looking folks shambling around the Bournemouth Gardens looking a bit weird. But I didn't get any trick-or-treaters either. It's the benefit of living in a top floor flat, I guess.
They're not going to buzz up there.
No, it's not going to happen. So the only people I get buzzing are people delivering me nerd stuff. So we've got another package, Hugh James. It feels like it's got cables in it. And I'm like, yes.
yes it does.
And I work at home like, oh, you're the only one today, do you want to do a chat, come in for no, gotta go, alright, bye. Anyway, what have we got going on this week? Of course it's another jam-packed episode. We've got news about the latest installment of the Room franchise and a concrete release date for you. Doom is trying to squeeze its way onto Nintendo Switch consoles, and I do mean squeeze, and it doesn't necessarily fit. More about that later. We've got an interview with the folks behind Sonic Forces Speed Battle, the latest installment of the Sonic franchise on mobile, and arguably a better one than most of the console releases. Plus, other new releases, including Final Fantasy Legends 2/Dimensions 2, depending on where you're standing. But first of all, it's the news. The Room is one of my favourite franchises on mobile phones because it does that thing all good games should do, which is it is designed with the platform in mind. We've had 3 installments so far, plus a little bonus episode, I think, on to release one of them. And now we've got The Room Old Sins coming to iPhone and iPad January 25th of next year. We haven't had a lot of details released, although, Em, you pushed up a little GIF, which I've had looping on my screen, which looks very spooky.
Yeah, it looks alright, doesn't it?
It does. We've got it's an attic room, and the camera like fades up from black, and there's a light, and there's papers on the floor, and there's an old table, and you're like, oh, it looks a bit of a spooky old mansion. And then you realise as it pans up, there's a dude, dead, possibly tied to the chair next to the table, and then it just fades to black, and you know, oh, what's going on? Can't be good. I'll probably have to reach through the screen and twist some things.
But no nipples.
No nipples! straight to the personal body invasions from M there. This new house has changed you.
It's all of the space, it's making me giddy.
Apparently, in terms of the timeline, say the Room 3 had a sort of fairly hard ending, and it followed relatively chronologically. I think with this one, the idea is they're going back to the beginning and doing, I don't know if it's a prequel or some kind of refresh on it. So I'll be very keen to see where they go with it. Obviously, we'll get more information when it comes. But in the meantime, keep them peeled. January next year, the room Old Sins. Now, coming straight to the present, Doom! We've talked about this coming to the Nintendo Switch, and there's been some news recently regarding how much space it's going to take up on your Switch, and whether you need to get a new memory card in order to play it. Now, this has come up with a couple of things, along with another story this week regarding L.A. Noire. Now, as the Switch owners, how much of this issue have you encountered? Have you just bought most of your games and got them on cartridges? Or have you been downloading digital stuff and then found your memory card, or your internal storage, rather, immediately full?
I prepare too much for these sorts of things. So actually, when I bought my Switch, I just went straight in and I splashed out on a very, very large memory card.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I did the same. I've filled it up now, but to be honest, I don't keep games installed, so I've got like a 32GB one, and I just regularly delete stuff I haven't played in a while.
I think I went for like 128 or something, so I'm not filling that up just anytime soon.
I'd love to get one of those.
Now, to confirm, because I don't actually have this, what memory cards do you actually have to use? It's not a proprietary one like Sony, is it? This is a normal memory card, right?
Just a SD SanDisk card, one, yeah. I think.
Wait, it's micro SD.
Micro SD, yeah.
So like the itty bitty one that I in my Android phone.
Yes, that's the one. Yeah.
Good. Well, no, that's okay because you can get like, I mean, my 64GB one was like £17 and 128. You know, you can get it for around about 40, 35, 40. So that's not too bad.
No.
I mean, with the Doom thing to highlight, they said like, no, you totally can fit it on your normal internal hard drive because apparently it's just going to be over 13GB, which is great. But the caveat is that you need an extra 9GB. To download the multiplayer mode. So it's like downloading the game again, almost, in order to do that. It's good they give you the option, because some people might not do the multiplayer, like me. But, and that is big. How much is the internal storage again? It's like, what, 50GB or something?
Oh, it's like
less than that?
32, yeah, less than that, I think. And then software makes it about 28.
Oh, okay, right. Oh, that isn't much, is it?
Nope.
Like, there's no real solution, I guess, other than... I mean, these are big games, and it's already been sort of pared back from 30GB. So I can understand like people being frustrated, but that's kind of like there's no real solution, is what I'm trying to say. Like, if you want to play console games on the go, you're going to need console type storage. And like you said, it's nice that the Switch doesn't have proprietary storage; it just lets you buy a nice 128GB SD card quite cheap, and then you don't really have any problems.
Yes, I will give it up to them for that because my God, the horror that Sony never seems to learn from with its, like, oh, PSP Go, and then it's Vita, and all the other things that have these weird, extremely expensive proprietary memory cards that you just don't want to buy because it becomes, you can't use it in anything else for anything, and they're always hideously expensive. It's a drag. Which kind of brings us over to what we said about the other game, L.A. Noire. So, if you buy the cartridge, you need a 14GB download to go with it, by the look of it. If you just buy it from the eShop, 29GB for L.A. Noire.
Yep. It's a big one.
Yeah.
Even if your Switch was virgin, out the box, brand new, you still couldn't download it.
Nope.
That's, interesting. You know,
I suppose it's quite a big game, though, if you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. But also, it's an old game from, like, several years ago, and it's mad that that should not fit on here. I know they've done 4K upscaling for like the other console versions, but surely that doesn't apply to the Switch. So it's just a lot. Like, for it to be completely unavailable to be downloaded, storage has become a little bit more necessary on mobile phones as the size of apps have grown. So originally, you know, download something that's 30 meg. Now you download games that are between 2 and 3GB. So as a result, memory's had to grow. But even then, there aren't any mobile games that are like, for example, 12GB.
True, probably because no one would play them.
You could still fit all the mobile games, technically, on like the iPhone 5C with an 8GB storage internally. And even if you bought that out of the box, you could still download even the biggest mobile game. So it's still kind of tailored to that platform. Granted, you don't have the option of a cartridge to put it in and do it that way, but it just... It's odd. I know they probably tried to keep the price down on the console for people who don't want to do the eShop. That's why it's a smaller amount of internal memory.
Maybe. There was a big hoo-ha when the memory stuff got announced, where it was just like everyone was expecting it to be like 64 gigs or something, and it turned out to be about 28, and it was like, why?
It's just because like nowadays, that's nothing. Now my phone's got about 90-100 gigabytes on it with the extra card that I bought. But even then, the internal storage of my little phone was 32 gig. Like, I got the same storage on that they're offering on the Switch. And it just seems, you know, there's nothing remotely that size that I would need to download on my phone. But even then, it looks like the games you buy with cartridges still need additional downloads as well. So eventually, even people who just play with carts will get forced into doing it. I don't know. I was just curious because you guys have had it, and I wondered, given that in your reviewing capacity, you've had to deal with loads of games, you haven't found it restrictive at all?
No, because a lot of the indie games, like, I get very surprised when I sort of have a look up at the storage side of it, and a lot of the indie games sit in the megabytes. Like, very, very comfortably, sort of, you know, 100, 200 megs, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that is true. I kind of expected some games to be massive anyway, so that's why I'm sort of now considering buying multiple SD cards to keep.
Really?
But then again, I'm the sort of person who deletes games regularly anyway. If I haven't played them in a few weeks, I keep it nice and tidy and just uninstall them. I mean, and Switch also does this nice thing where it can archive games, which keeps the icon on your device but doesn't have the install file. And also, it can auto-archive games that you haven't played in a while. So it can actually do a lot of the tidying up for you. Which is a nice function.
That's very good. Yeah. All right, I like that. All is forgiven then.
Yeah, I'm with that as well. You know, coming from a PC gaming perspective, I kind of expect games to be big, so I bought more memory.
Okay. Like, I don't think Doom should be coming to Switch generally. I think the file size doesn't really play a part of that. Like, I just don't think it's for that platform. I'd rather have a game like built by Nintendo for the Switch, Mario Odyssey, that looks gorgeous, runs in 60 frames per second, than a game that's been squeezed onto it, like you said.
No. I feel you. Okay. Mm. All right then, well, forgiving notes there for the Switch, but if you do want to get L.A. Noire digitally, you will need a memory card, and Doom, you can probably cram it on a bit, maybe, but maybe make some space. Ultramanos have been synonymous with the mobile platform ever since the early days of Cannibalt appearing on touchscreens. And if any character deserved an auto-running game, it's Sonic, which he finally got with Sonic Dash a couple of years back. Now, Sonic Forces Speed Battle has hit the app stores with real-time multiplayer racing aspects. And I'm joined by Andrew McMillan, a producer at Hardlight, to tell me all about it. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Good stuff. Now, as I mentioned there, Sonic Dash, when it came out, we all kind of went, well, this is obvious, isn't it? It's strange that this game hasn't come out before, given the fact that Sonic is all about speed, and all these auto-runners popped up left and right when people realised it was a good thing for a one-touch control system. You didn't work directly on Dash, but you then jumped on board with Sonic Forces Speed Battle. Now, this is kind of built on the ideas that were laid down in Sonic Dash. What have you guys done differently this time around?
Yeah, so as you say, I wasn't directly involved in Dash, but we've got a lot of guys that were. A lot of the developers and artists have all come from experiencing, you know, developing that game on Dash. Mm. With platforms being what they are, becoming more powerful and kind of server-based technologies and that kind of thing. Within the Sega IPs as well, it was a natural kind of evolution of gameplay, really.
So for people who've never played it before, it's that third person, what we would sort of cheaply refer to as a Temple Run style game, where it's your camera from behind, you're switching between lanes by, you know, tapping left or swiping left and right. With the first game, it was just Sonic charging down, collecting rings and avoiding enemies and whatnot. This time, you've got, is it up to three players at any one time?
It's a four-player.
Four, okay.
Yeah, four players. So you've got four lane tracks, mm-hmm. And there's also items in there. So not only are you running against other players in the battles, but you're also picking up items that you can then use against those other players. So we've got traps, so ice mines, standard mines, and that kind of thing. Mm. And then you've also got boost pads on the ground, and then you've got things like fireballs and different kind of weapons that you can use, you know, to gain an advantage over the other players.
Okay. I played it a couple of months back when it was in soft launch, and the thing that caught me off guard by it was the multiplayer aspect. I didn't realise going in that A, it was going to be multiplayer, but B, it was actually going to be real time. Because
yes.
You've got lots of multiplayer games on mobile which work via ghosts. So you just see the right. ghost of a player who's played, you know, 2 weeks ago or something. But they haven't gone real time multiplayer because obviously that is a tricky thing to get right, especially on mobile with connections dropping and 3G signals going in and out and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
It worked well. Like, I mean, just the fact that it worked at all surprised me slightly, but it worked really well on this. And we've seen that real-time multiplayer thing becoming more and more slick with the likes of Clash Royale taking off the way it did. How difficult was it to get four-way multiplayer working in real-time and have it work smoothly and at speed?
Yeah, it was pretty tough. I mean, we went through a lot of kind of hitches in development where we were trying to get that right, like you say, making sure it's smooth. The main challenges are with syncing up game player one versus player two versus player three and seeing, you know, everything in real time. And we're still working on that. That's still something we were, especially through soft launch, really trying to nail down and get right. The biggest thing is that the more players we get, the better that will get. Because of the way that the servers work, they're all regional. So mm-hmm. when you connect to the game, you will hopefully be being connected to players on the same server as you in the same region that you are.
Right.
So the closer the player or the closer you are to the server and also to those other players you are, the better ping you're going to get and the better the gameplay is going to be. So we have seen some issues through soft launch where players are complaining about lag and sync issues and that kind of thing. And that is purely because it's in soft launch and we're testing and we're making changes and we're tweaking things,
gotcha.
Which is the whole point, you know, the whole reason for soft launch. But also because the audience is smaller, we're not seeing hundreds of thousands or millions of players. So you might be playing someone in, I don't know, Vietnam or the Philippines, and you're in Canada. And therefore, the server, you know, just the ping times are much, much bigger.
Sonic, the character, in many ways, is sort of having maybe the start of a mini renaissance at the minute. What with Sonic Mania coming out and being so warmly received by everybody because it reminded people of why they liked the franchise in the first place.
Yes,
after,
indeed.
Yeah. After years of what some people might refer to as mishandling or mistreatment of the character, because they've tried almost everything with Sonic, doing it right. as, you know, 3D and platformers, and as in 3D platformer in the style of Mario 3D, and so many different things they've tried, and so much of it appears to have fallen flat or not resonated with the community. Whereas Sonic Mania went back to basics, and even though Sonic Dash is, you know, it's obviously a simple, casual, one-touch mobile game, but the essence of Sonic, the thing that people have always said they liked about the franchise, is the speed. And something like this, especially with the battle aspect, the multiplayer, I felt like a sense of speed. It has momentum to it, and as soon as a player kind of goes streaking past you when they pick up a power-up, you have that kind of, whoa, and then you try and chase them down again, and it gives you that, the game feels like it has momentum. Was that a tough thing to achieve? Because obviously you're not running a million miles an hour, but giving it the sense that you are moving at speed.
Yeah, it came with lots of different kind of iterations. So at first we were very much sort of testing the technology and making sure that the multiplayer aspect of it worked, like we talked on a second ago. Mm. But there was also that. There was, you know, the kind of standard dash speed that we had from the tech that we were using and from the work that we'd done previously. But we've also made smaller tweaks to make it feel like that. So for a good example of that is the way the camera works when you go over a dash pad. Mm-hmm. That made a huge difference. So obviously when you go over a dash pad, you do speed up.
Yeah.
But having that camera drop in behind you as you do really made a difference. And we saw that throughout the studio. When we were making these small tweaks and kind of trying to find the different ways to tweak things and to make things feel quicker, like you were saying, and everyone noticed it. Everyone saw it and, oh, that's really quick now. And, oh, that feels really exciting. And we're still making those changes now. We're still trying to make improvements to the game and also more competitive aspects. So we'll be looking at new characters. So between soft launch, we had 10 characters, and into hard launch now we've got, or into worldwide launch, we've got 15. And there'll be more coming, and there'll be different tracks, different environments.
Gotcha.
But that speed thing, that's a massive part of it, because you've got to feel like you're going super fast. I mean, got to go fast, right?
And it is something of, well, it is an illusion, because it reminds me of when you do that scuttle run thing in Gears of War, when the camera almost goes like fisheye lens, and it does that sort of, I forget what it's called now, that where you push in but pull out, pull focus out like they do in Jaws. It's that contra zoom. Yeah, it has that effect to it where it gives this illusion of like, whoa, you're being sucked into the screen and it feels like you're going faster than you are.
Really powerful. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and it's the same with us. That drop with the camera where it just drops in behind you, just that slight change in aspect makes a big difference.
So you're bringing over loads of characters, more characters from the franchise, that is. Important Sonic question here.
Okay.
Eggman or Robotnik?
In the studio, we use Eggman. Personally, I've always used Robotnik.
That's the correct answer.
I think the official is Eggman.
We're all looking for. Yeah, I know, that was a weird change, as I'm old enough to... Well, my older brother had a Mega Drive, so it was in the house when I was quite small, and Robotnik... for life.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, I was I don't know what age I would have been when I had a Master System and then we got the Mega Drive, so I was a hardcore Sonic fan. So for me, like, coming into the studio and people saying Eggman this and Eggman that, and I was like, you mean Dr. Robotnik, right? And they were like, oh, it's Eggman. So it's a weird one to get used to.
Poor deluded creatures. From the old games, the ones that you like, was there anything you were able to bring over and implement in this? Because the problem with the Sonic franchise has always been translating that classic side-scrolling 2D thing into a different format, but one which works. Yeah. We've seen Sonic 3D and you know, the 360 version that was... As soon as you tried to walk anywhere, you just fell off a platform because the speed was at odds with the 3D platforming element. So it's always been difficult to translate. What were you able to pull from the originals that you liked and thought, yes, I want that in this game?
Yeah, so we work closely with Sonic Team over in the States, and we use, you know, I think we touched on this in some of the YouTube videos and stuff. We use assets that they can give us as much as possible, but obviously we try and put our own spin on things as well. So, but there are so many big Sonic fans in the studio that are constantly trying to pull in stuff that they, you know, that resonates with them, that they remember from the Sonic franchise. So you'll see it in, you know, Green Hill Zone is very kind of traditional. And when we talk about different features that we might be putting in the game later on, obviously I can't really talk on any of that, but we're always looking at that angle. We're always looking at, well, what can we pull in from, I don't know, Chemical Plant Zone, or you know, what about this asset here, or this type of barrel, or this kind of thing. So there's enough excitement and kind of fanboyishness in the studio that we're constantly looking at that.
Are there any games that you've played from the Sonic canon recently that you have enjoyed? I mean, obviously the game shares a title with Sonic Forces, which is, you know, as a console iteration. How have you found the recent versions? I mean, have you tried Mania, for example? Did you guys?
Yeah, I love Mania. Okay. I mean, when it came out, obviously we all got copies working within Sega, and I love it. I mean, it just takes me back to my childhood playing on the Mega Drive. The music, the sound effects, the look, I mean, it's just so good. I didn't dip into much of the sort of in between the Mega Drive and beyond too much personally.
Probably wise.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't really an active choice necessarily. It was more about the platforms I was playing on and the types of games I was playing and I guess, you know, my age and that kind of thing. But Mania really, really took me back. That was amazing. And I'm super excited for Forces as well. Obviously, we get to play it here a little bit here and there. We've got the guys in the studio working on some of that stuff. So it's, I'm excited to see what the fan response is for that too.
One thing I would question, obviously it's a free-to-play game like the first game. How do you tread that balance between incentivizing players to want to, you know, maybe part with a bit of money here and there? Because, you know, at some point someone's got to get paid, and that is a reality of the gaming world. But also do it in a way that doesn't feel like you're hamstringing players and basically forcing them to pay out wadges of cash for nothing.
Yeah, it's a fine balance. I mean, some players are really happy to throw money at these games and progress quickly. So we enable that as much as possible because that's what some players want. Some players don't want to pay anything and they want to just be able to get through the whole game without that. So we obviously enable that with some element of taking slightly longer. But with this being a competitive game, what we're seeing with some of the hardcore fans that have been playing the game through soft launch is they're willing to really put the time in and race and race and race and get up through the leaderboards. And that's the benefit we've got with being such a competitive game, is that people are really chasing, you know, those top positions in the leaderboards and being first and winning race after race after race.
I seem to recall when I played it that there wasn't an energy system. You could just replay races. Is that still the case, or am I misremembering?
No, that's right. Yeah, you can play race after race after race. We do cap chests to an extent on a daily limit, similar to other mobile titles, so that you can't just continue throughout the game. The reason we do that is because we're worried that players will burn out too quick, and not want to play, continue to be competitive in the game.
Sure.
But yeah, so there's no fuel system, there's no energy system at the moment.
Okay, I can get on board with this. Well, the game is out right now, iPhone, iPad, and is it on Android as well?
So we're still tweaking and making sure that Android's working. It's still in soft launch on Android in certain territories, but we're working to get it out as soon as possible.
Gotcha. All right, then. Well, Android users can look forward to that in the future. Andrew, thank you so much for talking to me today.
No problem. Thanks for your time.
Out and about this week, or actually last week, before we get to the new releases, you've already heard a bit about Sonic, but we promised last week to talk about Mario, Super Mario Odyssey, which came out, but Em hadn't got the game yet, and Glenn wasn't here, and also didn't have the game yet. Now, you've both got the game, you're both here, you've both been playing it for a week. I want to hear the breakdowns and whether this really is the 10 out of 10 Famitsu 40 amazing bestest of game of all the games in the forever lands. Who wants to go first?
Glenn can. He's going to be more eager.
Yeah, yeah, that's true, actually. So I basically, my consensus is, it is as good as everyone's saying it is. It's my favourite Mario of all time. Ooh. And playing it has made me feel like a kid again, which is something that few games have ever done.
That's nice.
It's given me that sort. You know, when you were a kid, and every single game you played was like fresh because you didn't have much games to sort of, you know, compare to.
Yeah.
And like every single time you got a new game, you were just excited, even if it wasn't very good. In hindsight, you still had that fresh feeling. That's what Mario Odyssey has done to me. Like, it's, people have said, I've had mixed opinions from friends and colleagues and stuff, and some people have said it's just like best bits of Mario and other platformers chucked together, and I do kind of agree with them on some level, but I don't know, I've never really played a platformer that does this much. It's just the sheer volume of stuff in it that makes it incredibly fresh, and the environments are not they've got like the desert zone and the snowy world and stuff, but they've all got kind of little twist, like the desert zone is full of ice and stuff, which is interesting. So it's like the stuff there that's new,
confusing, if anything. Although they do say the desert gets well cold at night, so.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's there's a story reason for that. It's not just ice in a desert for no reason, like Bowser's been messing about and stuff. So there's a story reason. It's my favorite Mario. And previously I'd said Sunshine was my favorite Mario, which is, I know, is controversial in itself, but like that's how long it's been since I've had a Mario that's beaten Sunshine.
Wowzers. All right, then. So, Em, are you? Did I detect a slight note of hesitancy?
No, well, I mean, you guys know I'm not as big a Nintendo fan as Glenn is, but to be honest, I do agree with a lot of points. I kind of had areas which I find difficult, like the depth perception is a little bit off, but I think, you know, the more you play, the better you get at it. But like I said to Glenn when I came in on Monday, weirdly enough, the whole thing kind of reminds me a little bit of Spyro. In that
Spyro.
Yeah, I know, really random, but it's just the way the levels are designed and how there's always like a secret and there's always coins to collect and little mysteries and things. And some of the moons that they hide, they're just in the most ridiculous places, as in like ridiculous good ridiculous. Like in a desert under a wall which has a tiny crack that you might not see, which you then have to look like you're kind of drown, but then not drown, and come up the other side. And there's a cat on the roof. Oh my god!
Hang on, did you just segue into real life then?
Yes, I did.
Jesus Christ,
that was seamless.
Yeah, and there's a cat on the roof.
And there's a cat in the roof. But there is a dog,
I didn't know,
though,
because that's entirely possible for a Mario game that there's a cat on the roof. You know, I don't know.
That's true. But then in the Mario game, there is also a dog that catches your Cappy. So that's kind of fun.
Ah. And then you control the dog? Or does the dog just keep it in its gob and throw it at someone else?
No, I think the dog brings it back to you.
Oh, okay. Very nice. And the whole Cappy mechanic, which is obviously the crux of the whole thing, if you haven't heard already, but it's about, you know, chucking the cap and using it to possess other people. But you can also use the cap to do, like, longer jumps and all manner of things. It's really the key mechanic. That all feels good and organic and fun.
Yeah. Yeah, there's totally a learning curve, I think, because I'm nowhere near as good as the boys with the whole Cappy mechanic thing. Like, I still can't do the hat jump to save my life.
I saw stuff about the hat jump. Have you nailed the hat jump, Glenn?
I've nailed the first part of it, where you can apparently do two of them in a row. That, you know, dive onto the hat and then jump off it, then dive onto it again. I cannot do that second one. Right. I've done the first bit of it, but the cap is an odd one for me because thinking about it, like Nintendo always throws in like a new mechanic with each new Mario game, and it always kind of feels logical in a way, like the, you know, Cap Mario suit. He can climb walls. He can do loads of stuff a cat can. It all just made complete sense. And then the flood stuff, you know, the Super Mario Sunshine flood, where he can use it as a like water pistol, a jetpack, loads of stuff he can do with it. It always kind of felt logical, but with the hat, I'm not sure if that... Although I like all the mechanics of it, I don't know if it still has that same logic to it. Like, they've just basically made a hat into whatever they want it to be. Like, it's effectively a boomerang at times. You throw it on someone's head and you can... what's the word? Take over their body. What's that word for that?
Possess.
Thanks, James. You can possess people with a hat. And, like, you can't do that in real life. And I know it's a bit ridiculous thing to say in a Mario game, but it doesn't feel quite as natural as the other main mechanics, even though it is a really cool thing that you have in the game and, like, it's fun. And when it's taken away in some levels, you're like, shit, I need that hat. It still doesn't feel natural like some of the other Mario mechanics.
Okay. Other Mario mechanics, like what, for example, the stuff you have to do in Galaxy, where you know firing out stars and whatnot. I'm thinking
never
of like
actually
you
played that one.
You
what was the thing? No, sadly not. Well, what was the mechanic in Galaxy?
Well, there are a few things. Like they use the control stick because you got that Wii controller, the Wiimote. Mm. So you waggle in order to do an attack where Mario will spin out. Oh, so that takes a little getting used to the gesture control. And also you can fire stars at the screen in order to, you know, collect things and pick stuff up. So it becomes kind of almost a little light gun-ish thing. And they merge that into the gameplay as well. It's good. It's really interesting. There's a learning curve on that. Mm. Primarily because it's the Wii and you're getting used to that whole waggly nonsense.
Yeah.
Which isn't quite as efficient as pressing a button when you need to go, kind of jerk your whole arm in order to attack. But it is also quite satisfying, so they're good at doing that, Nintendo. But I've heard that the whole cat mechanic thing does feel nice and is good. And mainly the stuff I've heard is it just about it being very inventive and very joyful.
Okay, yeah, definitely. It's definitely one of those things. Like you every single world or kingdom you go to, like there's a few things in there where you'll be like, oh my god, that is very smart.
Did you experience any human joy, Emily?
Rarely. No, I didn't. No, I did, because like, I suppose the first time I played it first on Sunday when I was trying to steve off a very, very pungent hangover. So I was rather enjoying myself. Like, I think I woke up at the crack of dawn, because that's just the way they go. And my boyfriend was asleep, so I was like, you know what? And we don't have any furniture at the moment either. So I just went downstairs, plugged in my Nintendo, and played Super Mario Odyssey for about 6 hours.
I love that. No furniture. But I've got a power connection, and I've got a Switch. And that's all you need in this survivalist civilization we live in now.
Exactly. And a packet of prawn cocktail crisps.
Oh, of course. We're not savages. Well, good. It sounds like positive stuff of Super Mario Odyssey. So if you're on the fence, well, you can go and get it now. But you've probably already got it if you've got a Switch and you're listening to this now. So it's redundant anyway, but thanks. So Super Mario, Christ, it's on the brain, isn't it? Sonic Forces Speed Battle. We talked about it mostly in the interview there, but just to say, it's sort of the best Sonic focused mobile game that I've played, as in the one that's been made for mobile. The ports have come over and they've been sort of decent, you know, Sonic CD and everything, but there's always that control issue. Whereas this is like Sonic Dash, which was the right idea, third-person auto-runner like Temple Run, but it was a bit light. And by adding the multiplayer aspect to this, like we discussed in the interview, it just bams it up a notch for me. Obviously, it's still a light, casual game, but it does capture the speed and it does feel more thrilling than the rest of the Sonic stuff. And I would rather play this than Sonic 360.
Sorry. Wow. Is that Sonic 6?
I don't know. The one on the Xbox 360 that was just awful.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yes. No, they call it Sonic 2006, not Sonic 6. Yeah.
Is that what they call it? Sonic. All right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, this mobile game, despite being light and casual and, you know, everything else, it still feels more like Sonic and is more fun than the other ones. And the fact they get the mobile multiplayer working in real time, it's, you know, I was surprised when I first played it, and I played it again now it's out. And, yeah, still surprised that it works as well as it does. Obviously, you know, not super deep, but it does feel a bit more Sonic-y than most of the other console ones. So fair play to them there. Now, Final Fantasy Dimensions 2. Which is a sequel to, like, Final Fantasy Dimensions originally came out, right? I think it came out on other platforms before mobile. It was 2010 that game came out. And then it got brought over onto mobile in, like, a chapter-based game where you, like, play and you pay bit by bit by bit over five chapters, I think, kind of like a Telltale game. And it played much more like a 16-bit classic JRPG. It was basically that old formula of we're going to make it like 6 or 3, you know, for example. This one, the sequel, is quite different to the other ones. It's much more, again, like Sonic, mobile and casual. It's a halfway house in between the old school 16-bit JRPGs and the Drek, like or the Bravest, which was barely even a game. So this is much better than that, but it removes kind of the world exploration stuff where you wander around the world map and, you know, freely and get random encounters and then have to work out where to go next and then the big story expands. This is much more funneled. It pushes you just right. You'll do a battle. It's the active time turn-based battles like in the old games, but it's stripped down even more. So it's just like, you know, attack the thing, do the spell casting, fight. Then it does a little bit of plot as a kind of cutscene. And then it immediately just jumps to the next location, and then you get, here's the next mission to go on. And you just tap it, and then you get into another fight. So there's not that feeling of you exploring the world at your leisure. It's much more like, here is the next chapter. Play. And then it's just a series of fights.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. The thing that strikes me about it, though, is it's pretty damn expensive for what you get, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, when I was playing it, I didn't actually know how much it cost. And then when I looked at it and went, oh, because they said premium, and given the fact that it's kind of a light one, I was like, okay, cool, fine. It'll probably be like, you know, £5, £6. And then obviously I remembered, no, this is Square Enix. Of course it won't be. It's £15 for this. It's full price for what you would consider a classic or standard, inverted commas, Final Fantasy game. And it is light. And I would have thought that this would be a bit cheaper maybe to factor that in. But saying that, I've only played a couple of hours and I don't know how big it is. I don't know if it goes on for 20 or 30 hours. And they have got this massive campaign that I haven't scratched the surface of yet. But based on the gameplay, it feels much more light and mobile. And it does slightly feel at odds with the price. I mean, based on what... I don't know if you've actually seen it or played it, but... Like, have you bought any of the Final Fantasy games on mobile anyway? Like, you know, the remakes of the old ones, for example?
Not really, because I kind of played most of those remakes. They were originally on Game Boy Advance, weren't they? A lot of them that have been ported onto mobile. So I've kind of played them already.
Right,
but
I see.
From what I've seen, they've done a good job.
Yeah, they did. I don't know about this one. It was surprising. We think it's good, but... The thing I said in the video, or added to the review in the video, is like, it's good, provided you know what you're getting yourself in for. If you go in thinking, oh, it's another classic Final Fantasy game like the old ones, and you put down £15, you're going to be surprised, perhaps unpleasantly. So that's sort of worth bearing in mind, I think, when you go in. But you can read the review, you can also see the video review over on OutSpy, which gives you a much better feel of how the game actually works. So, Final Fantasy, now, Dimensions 2, if you're in Japan or Asia. Legends 2, if you're here, I think. But it was called Dimensions originally, the first one. So, I don't know. It's very confusing, and it literally is has got completely different titles based on which app store you visit. So, Shrugsville.
So it's just the noise.
It's my Halloween squeaky door noise.
Very convincing.
I thought so. Speaking of spooky, Simulacra, whatever you want to call it. It's one of them adventure games where you find a phone and you get in conversations with people and you look through texts and emails and photos. Those voyeuristic, like a normal lost phone and another lost phone and all those ones. It's one of them, but it's spooky. So you go in and you look at files and everything and videos, but then everything starts going strange. You get mad glitches appear, and the phone starts going all like, ooh, maybe the phone's alive, and maybe it's been haunted by ghosts of terrible people. Oh my God, it's coming from my face! That's what happens. And you chat with characters via the chat thing, and everything starts going a bit strange. We reviewed this. Christian reviewed it. He really, really liked it. Like, it's that mixture of the voyeuristic found phone genre, which is now a genre, I think, at this point. We've had enough of them. Mixed with the real-time chat things, like that Mr. Robot game did it, and a couple of other ones did it before. But with the spooky edge, apparently it is quite creepy and quite effective. And he gave it a 9. He really, really liked it. So maybe go and have a look at that. Simulacra is the name. This made me laugh. Em, you were going to review Monopoly on the Switch, weren't you?
Yes, I was. And I still will, because I'm determined.
How did that go? Why is the review not up already?
Because it took 6.5 minutes to load to the menu screen. And then I did the thing where I chose my characters. And then it took like 13 to 14 minutes to load into the game, and I just gave up.
Oh man, that's not good for a Monopoly. That shouldn't be that intensive on your hardware. I assume there's some teething issues there.
I would assume so. It's not exactly the most, it's not the calmest game to play regardless, so it's not good to enter such a game when getting irritated.
Right. But that was perhaps a bit surprising. The most surprising thing for me, however, was the price. This game is £40!
Yeah, it's quite expensive.
For Monopoly?
Yeah.
I know Monopoly has a monopoly on Monopoly, but what? That's, like, I'm pretty sure you can get, like, the tablet version for, like, a fiver, if that.
Probably. I've actually never played it on mobile.
But I really struggle with that. I know it's a popular game and classic games of all time. The idea that it's got 3D boards, and no one will know this because we couldn't actually play it, but you can do 6 players. Obviously, it's got multiplayer in it because, of course, but you know, the big sell is that it's all 3D-ified and nice now. But it's still just going to be Monopoly. Like, 40 quid. Anyway, we couldn't get it working, so we wouldn't necessarily advise you go get it right now. But it is out, technically. So, there you go. You guys seen this?
Oh, my God. Rune...
What was that?
There's a big recycling truck just came outside the house.
Ah, okay. I heard the...
Yeah, I've been watching my waves slowly go up. I was like, for the love of God, please, no, not now.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay, hang on. How loud is that on your end?
That's all right. It's not too bad.
Okay, just cut it all out. Go on.
Will do. All right. Here you go. Runic Rampage. This is one of the games that we actually saw during the big indie pitches. And that, I know you've done the bips before. Can you remember this one, Em? Did you see it? Or is this just one of the many?
Wait, it's almost gone.
What is it? Oh, the truck. Okay.
No, damn truck. I think that was the one in China Joy, wasn't it, Glenn?
I don't know. I didn't go.
Oh.
I might have written up the bit, but I didn't go. So I didn't actually play this. But it looks like Diablo, right?
Yes, very much so. It's top-down, isometric, hacky-slashy, grindy RPG combat. And it looks right for what it is, actually. Like, I haven't played it, so I can't say. None of us have. But it's out on iOS and Apple TV. Remember Apple TV, guys?
Yeah.
I don't. I've still got it sitting there in the box where it worked for 2 weeks and then crashed and died and demanded a hard reset with a special cable. And I went, you know what? No.
It's fair.
But yeah, you're a dwarfy person. You've got a big hammer. You're smashing the crap out of the undead. And it looks quite sort of retro. It's lo-fi, low-poly stuff, but it's cute enough. And if you're a Diablo fan, it might be down your alley. That's out on iOS. £3.99 or $3.99. So, you know, we'll have a look at the video first and we'll maybe do a review of it a bit later on. This one caught my eye just because it's weird. Million Onion Hotel. This was mentioned, as you say in the news story, Emily, 3 years ago this was brought up.
That's pretty wild, isn't it?
Yeah, and I haven't played it because we haven't got it on the JA yet, but I've studied the trailer twice. I still don't know what's happening.
I know. I was looking at it yesterday and I was just so intently trying to just figure out what on earth is going on.
Because it's a grid-based game where you've got, like, vegetables and fruits and that popping up. And it's like, okay, so this is a match game, right? This is kind of a match three thing. That's what it looks like. But I don't see how you're moving the characters around on the screen. And then all of a sudden, everything shifts up. And then a bunch of cows run along the bottom of the screen. And then some asparagus comes flying in from the left. Asparagus with a face. And then a million tiny little pygmies attack a goofy-looking onion.
Yes.
And I don't know what's going on.
I don't know. I think this might be one of those games that you kind of load up, get a feel of the mechanics for, and just don't ask questions.
Yeah, because despite the grid-based like nature of the game, it's like, oh, it's got 70 story cards, 30 hidden characters, a full detailed story with shocking hidden ending. It's like, I'm almost tempted, like, just because it's so unusual. It's a pixel art thing. It looks absolutely bonkers. It's £3.99 or $3.99 at App Store and Google Play at the minute. Also, there's a big old list we've got of all the new games. I can't go through them all here right now. But finally, Pez. There's a new Pez game, and it's a card collection game.
Yay.
Like Panini, only on your phone, you can collect the world's most famous football players and create the ultimate team. Yeah.
That's all I've ever wanted to do in life.
It is. But in many ways, it would probably suit our new loot crate-focused gacha mobile games anyway, because that's what I've been thinking recently. It's like all of this like gacha stuff and loot crates and people getting annoyed about it, and well, you buy a thing and then you get a crate and you don't know what's in it and it might be rubbish, and it's like, yeah, I remember that. They were called Panini sticker books. And you would buy packs of 10 stickers and then 9 of them you already had, and then you got one maybe that was useful. And it was just that same sort of gacha gambling-y thing, or at least taking a chance on something, and that's why my parents never let me have them.
Yeah, that's how I ended up with 600 Pokemon cards.
You fell victim to the curse. There you go. So we've always had this kind of stuff, but maybe it's a bit more insidious now. But anyway, Pez Card Collection, you can get that out on mobile at the minute. And that's it for this week. Thank you all for listening. And come back and join us next week. We'll have loads more stuff and interviews and all good things that you know to expect at this point. And if you haven't been murdered in your house yet, don't fall out any more windows, Em. Make sure you go into the room, check your exits.
But not that one.
Like in the shooting games. Make sure you cover your six, check your corners, and make sure you don't fall out a window.
Okay, I will try my best, but I'm not making any promises.
Excellent. All right, then. And we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See you next week, guys. Bye.